of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. You know, do you know that feeling you get when you haven't seen someone or talked to someone for a while, and then bang, they're on the Jumbotron. No, or they're here with you. That's the feeling we have right now. Pastor David Langford, the voice of evangelism.com. He is with us. He is with us, and it's been a while. You know, he went through some stuff with his family, his uncle. So, just, you know, I'm glad we had him in our prayers, and I know you had him in your prayers. But Pastor David Langford, the voice of evangelism.com, a tremendous minister and a prolific author, a tremendous author as well, and a guy who is on the airwaves and thankfully on with us. Pastor Langford, thanks for coming back on and not giving up on us.
Oh, we never give up on you guys. It's a wonderful and a great joy to be with you, and I do want to thank everyone for their prayers. You know, if the devil can't get to you, he seeks another venue, whether it's your children, your spouse, your employer, whoever it might be, to get to you. He has many, many means and modes to getting to God's people.
Man, Pastor, you just said a whole mouthful, because I've seen that happen in our camp time after time after time over the last several weeks, and it's just staggering what you just said. It's staggering. So, yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, we feel like for the last 6 weeks to 2 months, we've been under the vehement assault of the enemy, but hey, as I said, we don't give up, we don't quit, and if he can't get to us as individuals, you or me, he looks for another venue where he can attack us indirectly, as he so did Job. And that was his first attack, was to come to God and attack Job, and then when God said, okay, then he went and he killed all of his sons, his daughters, his she-asses, his oxen, his camels, his servants, fire fell out of heaven, and all of these bad things happened to him. That still didn't work. So then he went personally the second time after Job and smote him with boils from the crown of his head to the soles of his feet. That's a very arduous place to be in, needless to say. And Job 2:6, and the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. That's powerful, that God will allow a human man, a human being, to be placed in the hands of the devil. And you know why God allowed that? Because he knew he could trust Job.
And Pastor,
he knew he could trust Job.
The book of Job is one of my favorite stories in the Bible for a number of reasons, but the one thing that I think every Christian should go back and read it again, because just like Jesus was an example of how we are to live our life on earth, Job is also an example. And we need to understand that as believers in Christ, just as scriptures say, that all who believe in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution, and that we need to take up our cross and follow in the footsteps of the Lord. Well, just as you were talking about, Satan is the ruler of this world under God's authority, and he has the ability to try to get to us, to ruin our faith, and as you just pointed out, not just directly to us, but to, the circumstances and people around us. And Job's a perfect example of that, because he went through it personally, and also with his family, and losing everything he had. But as he kept his faith, the Lord rewarded him. And I don't think there could be a better example of what it is like to be a Christian than Job.
That's so true. He endured it all. He suffered it all. And even his own flesh, through his wife, no more twain but one flesh, being married, she said, why don't you curse God and die? And he went through the crucible, and he came out. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about tonight. There's a lot of people I know in my spirit listening that really feel discouraged, and they feel beat up. As I said, if the devil can't get to you personally, he seeks a venue, an avenue, to get to you that he knows will affect you and can affect you greatly, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a child, whether it is a sibling. You know, I witness all of these things all the time in ministry, and I've never failed to be amazed at how the enemy will seek to work through a family member and create distortion, confusion, chaos, just all sorts of havoc. He seeks to use to mentally browbeat God's people. I want to take a few minutes tonight, if it's all right, to look at 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning at verse 6, wherein greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations. Of course, the word manifold, it means multiple types of temptations. Now, the word temptations here in the Greek can also mean a trial, a time of pain, a time of suffering, a time of affliction. God also can allow someone to be tested. We know that he tested Abraham and his faith when he asked Abraham to offer up his only son, who was Isaac. But the meaning depends on who's doing the tempting. If it is God, it's for the purpose of proving someone and never for the purpose of causing that person to fall. If it is the devil who tempts, then his purpose is to cause us to fall and to destroy us. So God allows, needless to say, testing. But God will never allow you to be tempted or to be tested above that you're able. 1 Corinthians 10:13, Paul says, I have no temptation taken you, but such is as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will, with the temptation, also make a way to escape that you might be able to bear it. I know that's a kind of a lengthy verse, but it's the same thing. And so, whatever you're going through, he said, there hath no temptation taken you, but such is as common to man. Some of the very things that Job went through, many of us are going through at different times and cycles within our life. But notice what he said, but God is faithful, who will not suffer. Now that word suffer there means he will not allow, he will not tolerate you to be tempted or tested above that you're able. Now if it's the devil, he's doing it to destroy you. He's doing it to corrupt you. He's doing it to circumvent God's will and God's plan for your life. But here's what I love what Paul said. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted or tested or tried above that you're able, but will with the temptation, he will with the trial, he will with the adversity also make a way to escape that ye may be able to bear it. Sometimes the escape route may be very short. There may not be a lot of time given prior to the escape, but that's why it's imperative to walk in the Spirit. You know, Potiphar's wife was determined to seduce Joseph. And if you go back and read Joseph's life, it's believed he was a very handsome man, very tremendously in stature, and very pleasing to the natural eye. And Potiphar's wife, her intent was to display him before her lady friends. And she was determined to have him, and so she was trying to seduce him. And she said, just come lie down with me, you know, because she felt like if she could just get him in that, you know, position, she could force herself on him and he would finally capitulate, surrender. But you see, God made a way of escape. There wasn't much time. There wasn't much time to think about it, to contemplate or debate it. But he did recognize, he said, I cannot do this against my Lord, talking about Jehovah, neither my master whom I serve, because he's given me all the free will and privileges of his house. And so when she grabbed a hold of his garment, he had to make that quick decision. Will I debate her? Will I contend with her? Or will I escape? And so, of course, he took that way of escape. And, of course, it caused him imprisonment. But his objective was to remain faithful to Jehovah in spite of all the things that were happening to him. And there's some people tonight, I know in my spirit, I have this certitude, you know, you really feel like you're being pressed. You're being pressed greatly in your circumstance, in your situation. But what you have to do in this time that we are pressed, we have to trust God. There's a passage that I love dearly in 2 Corinthians 1 and 8. Paul said, "For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble which came to us in Asia, that we were pressed out of measure, above strength, insomuch that we despaired even of life. But we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God, which raiseth the dead, who delivered us from so great a death, and doth deliver, and whom we trust that he will yet deliver us." So I want to back up to verse 8 here in 2 Corinthians 1. "For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant, not knowing the enormity of our trouble that came to us while we were in Asia, that we were pressed out of measure." Some of you listening tonight, there's no instrument that is available to measure how greatly you're being pressed. But the only way to get the olive oil correctly, according to the Old Testament, you had to press it out. You could not use heat or anything to extract it any other way. It had to be pressed. And to get the fragrance out of the petals, whether they be rose petals or what, they have to be pressed. They have to be crushed to get the fragrance out of them. Paul said we were pressed out of measure, above strength. God has allowed you to come to a place where in your natural strength, you don't have enough. Your natural strength will not help you get out of this. You're going to have to lean upon the Lord. You know, David in Psalm 16, verse 8, he said, "I have set the Lord always before me. He's on my right hand. I shall not be moved." If I put God on my right hand, and if I stand that close proximity to God, that means the devil's got to get through God before he can move me. That's what the psalmist was saying. Going back to 2 Corinthians 1, above strength, insomuch that we despaired even of life. Life in itself was disparaging. Life was not worth living. Life had become so arduous, so difficult, so cumbersome. It was unbelievable, Paul said. And he didn't want the brethren to be ignorant, not knowing, not understanding the gravity of the persecution, the adversity, and the trouble they were going through. And he went on and he magnified this trouble. And he said, "But we had the sentence," or the verdict. That word sentence in the Greek means the verdict. "We had the verdict of death in ourselves." In other words, if you would look in Paul's heart, you would see sentenced to death. If you looked in Silas' heart, sentenced to death. But the reason we were sentenced to death is that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God, which raiseth the dead. In other words, Paul is understanding, I've got to do away with my self-assurance and my self-confidence. Psalms 118, verse 8 says, "It is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in men." And for many years, it never hit me. But one day I was quoting that verse, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. That speaks to a man's self-confidence. You know, many times we can be cocky, arrogant. You know, "I got this, you know, don't worry about this, I got this covered." And that's what the psalmist is saying. It is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in men. And so we are all men or women. And sometimes the devil wants us to trust in ourselves. And that's the exact opposite that God told Paul, that we should not trust in ourselves, but trust in God, which raiseth the dead. In other words, if I were to get killed in my circumstances, my arduous, grievous trial, God is able to raise me from the dead if he so wills. I mean, this is the magnitude and the depth and the breadth of how God was allowing them to be pressed. And as I said, if you would look at their hearts, you would have seen over their hearts the words, sentenced to death. And there's a reason that God brings each of us to these places sometimes. Mainly is because he wants our undivided attention. You know, David, in Psalms 119, verse 67, he said, before I was afflicted, I went astray. I want you to think about that. Before I got into trouble, I went astray. Then he goes on to verse 71, Psalms 119, verse 71. He said, it is good for me that I have been afflicted, tested, or tried, that I might learn thy statutes. I have a statement that I always tell people that go through a time of great and grave difficulty. Don't go through it and not learn anything from it. And yet I see people go through circumstances, and Doug, you're aware of this, you see them repeat the same thing again.
Pastor.
And again, and again, and again.
That's even in my life, I have a history of doing that. And, you know, if I were smarter, and like most people do, you would learn from those mistakes. Some of the best ways you can learn are from learning from your own mistakes. You know, it's one thing to be taught certain things, but life experiences are a much better way for people to learn. And specifically, as we just said about the mistakes, you know, that is one of the best ways to learn through experience. But if people like me, you know, they're hard-headed, they a whole number of things that goes through your mind that are just kind of unexplainable, kind of like what you were talking about,
with
that ties to the flesh.
You got a unanimous vote there with your dad.
Yeah, and see the key is, though, the more the closer you get in your relationship with Jesus, and the more that you get into the Bible, the less likely, at least I am, to make those mistakes over and over again. But if
absolutely.
I start, you know, backsliding in the Word and in my prayer life and in my relationship with God, then that comes back much easier. But when my relationship is good and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, those things don't happen. So there is a solution.
Well, that's why I gave those two verses in Psalms 119, verse 67, and verse 71. Before I was afflicted, before I got in trouble, I went astray. You see, the devil will seduce a person by painting a rosary, a beautiful path of bliss and joy and grandeur and all of this stuff. And that's for the sake of luring, you know, the person in. You know, fishermen, they like these fancy lures, these little things, that little gadgets that do things to arrest, get the eye of the fish, attract them to come bite on this thing. That's the way Satan is. And he always paints a pretty picture, but he never shows the rot and the ruin and the decay that is beneath the temptation. He never wants you to see that. Because that's why he's called a snare, he's called a fowler, he's called the destroyer, he's called the thief. I mean, he's got so many names, it's unbelievable. The wicked one. His intent is to bring us down, because that allows him then to go back and accuse us before the Father and say the work that your son did on the cross is not enough. See, they can't live right. But they can't endure.
Just, you know, an example of what you're talking about. You can have somebody who is, you know, has $50 million, a famous actor, you know, rich beyond their wildest dreams, you know, in which most people in the world would look at and with envy, saying, I wish I had that life. And that person can be, you know, so completely miserable. And on the other end, you can have somebody who's homeless, and, you know, basically, is in a survival mode, but who is, has that faith and is in a better attitude than, you know, the person who's, you know, rich beyond their wildest dreams. Everything, you know, as you were talking about, the devil will make things look appealing that you don't have, or that you think you want. And many people will say, you know, well, why, Lord, why couldn't I get this, or why couldn't you do this for me, or help me do this? and not realizing many times it's for our own good. You know, a lottery, winning a lottery is an example of that. So many people who win the lottery, it ends up being turned into these tragedy stories.
Absolutely.
They go broke, they overdose. And, you know, so we look at things like maybe we don't have as much as other people or the right situations, but we need to understand that these things are being done to, as the Lord said, to refine us like gold in a furnace. He's
right.
trying to refine us and get us to move to that spiritual side. And it's not the happiness isn't about what you have in this world. It's about the spiritual connection that you have inside you, no matter your outside circumstances.
You witness all of these movie stars, rock artists, you know, Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson, Led Zeppelin. I mean, Elvis Presley. The numbers are just off the charts. How these people died, you know. And I don't know. I don't think they intentionally take the drugs to overdose. I think they're high, and therefore they don't remember how much they drank the last time or how many pills they took the last time. And they take so much until their involuntary actions in their body are shut down, and they die because of the overdose. Not that it was an intentional overdose, but it's because their mind has become void and blank of what's actually been taking place. But, you see, at the end of the day, when you've had all the drugs and all the alcohol and all the money and all the promiscuity and illicit sex, at the end of the day, the soul of a man is still empty. And why is that? Why couldn't that satisfy a man or a woman? You know, my wife and I were watching, I got to where I've recorded a lot of these, the old Virginian movies. And one of the guys' name was Doug, I forget his last name now, but we looked him up. We Wikipedia'd him. And he had been married five or six times, and he died at the age of 60. And in the 60s, he was a, you know, this cowboy. And I thought he had all of this glitz and glamour, but he never seemingly found that right spouse, you know, and died a premature death at 60 years of age. But the reason a man can never find complete satisfaction in this life is because God breathed into man, and man became a living soul. No other creation, no other part of his creation did God give a man mouth-to-mouth resuscitation where he actually breathed into him the breath of life. That's why when a person dies, they don't cease to exist. They're just, their body, their clay jar, their earthen vessel goes back to the ground from whence it came. But the soul and the spirit are eternal because God breathed into them. And so, you know, people think, well, if I can get this or I can get that, I'll be fulfilled. But see, that's the lie of the enemy. Because, as I said, the soul of man is so vast and so large, nothing in the world can ever fill the place of God's love. You know, Philippians 4:11, Paul said, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned, in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, that means as low as you can go, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. And so the reason Paul said that was because he never knew how he might find himself. You know, one day he's on a ship and about to be sank. A storm comes up. You know, the next day it's robbers. Go read the 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Read the whole 11th chapter, and you'll see the multitude of perils of his countrymen, of robbers, thieves, watching, shipwreck. He just goes through a litany of perils in his life. And sometimes we all feel like it's a litany. You know, the story of Job is a very interesting one when you dissect it. While one servant was yet speaking, yet another came. While he was yet speaking, yet another servant came. In other words, the devil would always leave somebody close by to just come bring him more bad news. And before that guy could get through telling him, the terrible things that had just happened to Job's family or his cattle or whatever, another one was standing right there to jump on the bandwagon and say, hey, you know what, this just happened. And as soon as he got through to sharing his story of chaos and disaster and turmoil, here's another guy. And so this is how the Satan, he wants to be continual. Why? Because he's trying to beat us down. And of course, Peter, in his epistle, he understood this. That's why he said, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations or trials. You're heavy. And of course, in verse 7, he says, that the trial of your faith. Are we going to take a break?
Yeah, Pastor, we are.
Are we?
As a matter of fact,
okay.
We're coming right up on it.
I thought we were getting probably close. Go ahead.
Yeah. And you know what? Just to show off a little bit, you were referencing Doug McClure.
Doug McClure.
Yeah. Actually, he died at age 59.
59.
I don't know why I know that. I really don't.
Well, but, I'm glad you were able to help me tonight on my failing mind.
Well, I think I'm old. I used to watch that as well. In fact, I happened to catch over the holiday weekend, the 4th of July. I saw a replay of that. I think it was like at 4 o'clock in the morning. Caught about 15 minutes of it, and that's what made me think of that. But anyway, thank you for that. Pastor David Langford is our guest. TheVoiceOfEvangelism.com is his website. Stay right where you're at, folks. 3 minutes. We'll be right back.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric said,
it's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Trang Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changeswoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Thanks for holding with us. Our guest, Pastor David Langford, his website, thevoiceofevangelism.com. He's the voice of evangelism, truthfully. He's what I refer to as our pastor, and I like to refer to him as America's pastor, although he may not admit that or like that. Before you get back to Pastor Langford, folks, let me direct your attention to readymaderesources.com. That's readymaderesources.com. It's been a while since Bob Griswold was on, but let me tell you something. The communication equipment that he's got for our listeners, the setup that he's got, it's important for everyone, I believe, in these times that we are approaching to have good communication equipment. If you go to readymaderesources.com, that's readymaderesources.com, click on the outdoor tab. From there, look to the left, click on the communications tab. There you'll see communication equipment. From there, the second from the left is the Hagman Radio Special. All right. It's reduced by, I think, $50. It's all inclusive, and it's something that I highly recommend. Look, folks, communications is important. Ham radio is extremely important. They have their place. ReadyMadeResources.com is the place to go. In addition, one of my favorites, medical equipment as well. And I would urge everyone to stock up as they see fit. Night vision equipment, thermal optics, they've got everything, and I mean everything, and we're not talking Walmart quality, we are talking top quality. ReadyMadeResources.com, ReadyMadeResources.com. Pastor Langford, thank you so much for your patience. Let's continue, sir.
The trial of your faith, simply put, your faith is going to be examined as though it were under the auspices of a trial taking place. Evidence, witnesses, etc., etc. All of this is what takes place. And many times, our faith is tested by afflictions. And afflictions can be many, many, many things. And so, James 1 and 2, my brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into divers temptations or afflictions or trials or suffering, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. It's amazing how God describes patience in a female gender, because it is a fact, for the most part, women are more patient than men. And for whatever reason, God uses that analogy, but let patience have her perfect work. You see, this is about maturing and perfecting the child of God, these trials, these temptations, this suffering. James 1 and 3, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. Same thing Peter said, that the trial of your faith, and he goes on to describe your faith, is being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it, gold too, is tried by fire. Why is the gold put in the fire? To remove the impurities. Why does God allow you and I to be cast into some of the most difficult and arduous trials that we would ever have to face? Well, this is why reading your Bible is so important and so significant, because in the Bible, you're going to find the answers about your suffering, about your trials, about your adversity. Now, the same epistle that Peter has written here, you go out to chapter 4, verse 12 and 13, Peter said, Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, test you, examine you, as though some strange thing happened unto you. That word strange in the Greek means something foreign, something bizarre, something weird. You're like, why in the world is this happening to me? Peter goes on in 1 Peter 4:13, but rejoice. Is that not exactly what James told us to do? Count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. You see, the perspective that these men had is about joy. Now, admittedly, I don't always glory and rejoice in my sufferings, my adversity. But this is what they're telling us. But rejoice. Why rejoice? Inasmuch as you are a partaker of Christ's sufferings, you are relating to the very same things that Christ went through. You see, we look at Christ oftentimes incorrectly. We say, well, he was God. Whoa, 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 whoa. That's absolutely and 100% correct. But he was also man. Why? Well, the fundamental reason was so he could die a natural death. Hebrews 2:9, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he by the grace of God should taste death for every man. So he had to be made lower than angels. Why? So he could die a natural death. Then Hebrews 4:15 says, for we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. So for him to understand Joe Hagman, for him to understand Doug Hagman, for him to understand David Langford, he had to be tempted in all points so he could know what he was doing when he was giving his life, what he was dying for. He had to understand our misguided steps, our weaknesses, our fragility, our failures. He had to fully understand that. That's why he had to be made flesh. Deity cannot understand humanity. Humanity cannot understand deity. So God, in his infinite wisdom, says, I'm going to give you a God-man, the Son of God, both human, both deity. And see, he never used that deity to exempt himself from suffering. He told him, he said, do you not understand I could call down 12 legion of angels right now and deliver myself? See, he didn't draw on his deity for himself. He only drew on his deity for our humanity. Now, I know that might be a little bit boggled in my speech, but I want you to understand, deity in its natural state cannot understand humanity. Humanity cannot understand deity. I can't, you know, who is God? Where did he come from? You know, where did he come from? When did he start? Well, you can't fathom that, neither can I. Yet God in creation, the day with God started in the evening. The evening and the morning were the first day. So, you know, he does things always different than how we can fathom and understand, but that's the way the scripture tells us in Genesis chapter 2 or Genesis chapter 1. But the point is, Jesus took on human flesh that he could understand the literal physical pain, suffering, emotional pain, distress, suffering, all of it. And I know that's hard for us to understand that, but that's what he did. And so Peter's telling us, you're going to be a partaker of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory, he comes in glory when he returns, shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. Now, why does Peter say that? That when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. Because you're going to partake of the same doxa, the same glory that Christ has. Romans 8:18, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time is not worthy to be compared to the glory which shall be revealed in us. Colossians 3:4, when Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall you appear also with him in glory. See, Peter understood when he comes, that's why we have to be transformed from a mortal creature to an immortal creature, from a corruptible creature to an incorruptible creature. You could not stand the presence of God in his glory unless you had a glorified body. The glory of God is beyond anything that a man could fathom, because it is so superior to flesh, carnality, anything of that nature, because that's where he dwells. That's what he lives in. So Peter says, rejoice. This is 1 Peter 4:13. But rejoice inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. We keep on fighting the good fight of faith. We keep pressing. pressing onward. We keep remaining steadfast. We keep remaining faithful. Why? Because in the end, whether it be by death or by living life at his second coming, we're going to partake of that glory one way or the other. You know, Paul said in Philippians 1:20-21, so now also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death. For me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. So Paul said, whether it, you know, by life or by death, it doesn't matter. Christ is going to be magnified in me and in his totality. So then, going back to 1 Peter 1:7, that your faith is going to be tried with fire, and that is to remove out the impurities. You know, one of the greatest lies that's ever been perpetrated on people is you have to sin every day. That is as foolish as saying, I have to commit adultery. I have to get drunk. I have to shoot, you know, cocaine or heroin. No, you don't. It is a choice. See? And I know that makes a lot of people mad when I say that. One guy, when I was in Dallas, said, I want to shake your hand. Because I made a statement down there. I said, I've been here 3 days and I've not sinned yet. He said, I want to shake your hand. I've never met one man that ever went that long without sinning. Well, you know, that's an excuse. That's an excuse, you know. You see something that's not becoming, you know, turn your head. Look the other way. Don't dwell on it. You know, don't set yourself up for the fall. You know, I tell people, I say, I'm gonna quit drinking, but they leave a pint of liquor in the top dresser drawer just in case they fail. Well, you've made provision to fail. You've already set yourself up to fall. You know, that's why we're told in Romans 13:14, and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. You know, you can't provide because your humanity is weak, and that's why God allows it to be tried and tested. And here's the reason why. Peter makes it clear in verse 7, 1 Peter 1:7, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. All of those of you listening tonight, you're listening tonight, and you still believe in a pre-tribulation rapture, will you please explain to me, is that pre-tribulation or a second advent coming? Somebody needs to tell me and show me whether that verse is pre or post. You see, you can't. I haven't been down this road. Because Peter understood there's only one second coming of Christ. So he doesn't make a delineation in that verse. Which means, if it's tribulation, so be it. If it's suffering, so be it. If it's by death, so be it. See, this is where people get off the track. Because for God to present to himself a glorious church, and that we can partake of that same glory which he possesses, we're going to go through some stuff, because he says in Ephesians 5:27, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. How's that going to happen? That's going to happen because we're going to suffer. We're going to go through times of difficulty. We're going to go through times of sorrow. A woman's labor pains are more frequent, and they get more severe the closer the birth of that child. I remember when our first child was born, I know exactly where I was. I walked in the house, I'd been playing golf, and my wife was putting up wallpaper, and she had a contraction. That was probably about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. 5 o'clock the next morning, the baby was born, 13 hours from that point. But I witnessed, as the baby was getting closer to being born, I witnessed the greater the labor pains, and I witnessed the frequency had increased tremendously, drastically. You see, and this is what's happening in the earth. This is what's happening in the world, and this is why I'm trying to encourage you tonight, because this is only going to intensify. See, when Jesus said, these things are the beginning of sorrows, that literally, that's Matthew 24:8, literally means birth pain. That's exactly what that means in the Greek. It is birth pains. And so going through these things cleanse us and rid us of the sin that Satan is trying so unbelievably trying to get into us. Satan is looking for a way to get you to sin against the Lord. You know, 1 1 Peter 4:1, he that hath suffered in the flesh hath ceased from sin. In other words, if it takes suffering to keep me, to stop me from sinning, so be it. Or maybe God is testing my faith to bring me to another spiritual level of trust. Of trust, as I said in the beginning. If Satan can't get you to break, he then goes to someone he can break, so that person might unintentionally hurt you. Now, oh, by the way, my book is being printed, so we'll have that out here in the next week to 10 days, the New Jerusalem Bride and the Mystery of the Church. While I was writing this book, I realized this is nothing derogatory, this is not demeaning, this is not condescending. Why didn't Satan come to Adam? He came to his wife. And I'll tell you why.
Weaker?
That's right. He knew there was a weakness there. Now, why? I don't understand. But he understood there was a weakness there. And maybe it's because she came from his rib, his side. The Bible tells us in the 1 Samuel, I believe it's chapter 3 or 2 Samuel 3, Abner was killed. They stuck a dagger under his fifth rib. And there's something about getting a blade, a knife under a man's rib, taking his life. That's all in the natural, but it's also in the spirit. You know, if the devil can't work against you through your spouse, maybe he'll go to one of the children and try to create a very tremendous and difficult situation. You know, as a pastor, I've witnessed so many things through the years, and you know in your heart, the devil is trying to break this family. He's trying to break this marriage. He's trying to destroy this. You know, remember, he comes to kill, to steal, and to destroy. There's an ill motive, there's an ill intent, there's an ill will behind what Satan is doing. You know, you've heard me quoted Luke 22:31. Simon Peter, Satan hath desired to have you that he might sift you as wheat. That word sift in the Greek means he will riddle, he will pierce, he will perforate your soul. He's desired. That when you exegete that phrase, Satan hath desired to have you. The Greek says he has exceedingly demanded that I give him your soul. Don't ever think Satan doesn't have a desire to hurt you. He's not your friend. He's not your buddy. He's your enemy. 1 Peter 5:8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking those he may devour. You have a personal savior, you have a personal adversary. Now, whether it's Satan himself, probably not, but he has an emissary, he has a minion, he has a cohort, he has someone that he can dispatch to just wreak havoc in your life. I mean, just untold havoc. And when this comes, this is not to destroy us. If God allows this, this is not to destroy us. This is to drive us to Christ. You know, I find in my own life, when the going gets tough, I need to spend more time in the Word. I need to spend more time in prayer. This is how Satan catches us off guard. It's when you least expect it. It's that element of surprise. That's why he's called a thief. A thief doesn't tell you when he's coming. He wouldn't be a thief. He doesn't tell you when he's coming to rob or to break and enter. He never gives you a heads up. Neither will Satan. He will slam you so unexpectedly, like, where in the world did this come from? You know, well, if you're praying and you're walking in the Word and walking in the Spirit, it's hard for him to catch you in a snare, because your spiritual acumen is so, you're so keen to, you know, something's up. It's in your spirit. I know he's lurking. I can't see him. I can feel him. I can sense the evil presence. And it can be felt. It can be felt. Satan is an entity. His minions, his cohorts, his emissaries, they are real. You can sense their presence, just as you sense the presence of God. I sense the presence of the enemy at times. I know it. I know it. It's demonic. It's oppressing. You know, Peter said in Acts 10:38, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil. You see, people get so oppressed, they turn to drugs, they turn to alcohol, because they're being pressed. Just take off the word O-P, and the rest of the word is just pressed. What did Paul say? We were pressed out of measure. See? So it's Satan pressing. You know, there's a gambling term. We're going to press. You know, we're down three holes. We got one to play. We're going to press. That means we're putting everything on the line for the last hole. Satan is a master at pressing people. See, he knows how to press. And Paul said, we were pressed out of measure. You there was no way you could measure it. And so this is what I want you to understand tonight. He comes for the purpose of pressing you until he causes you to capitulate, to break up, to break down, to give up. I know we're about out of time. I want to close with verse 8. Whom having not seen, ye love. In whom, though now ye see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory. I want you to look at what Peter said. Having not seen, ye love. In the natural, it's hard to have a love for something that you cannot see. You love your wife. You love your husband. You love your children. You love your grandchildren. You love your job. You love your car. There's all types of love, affection, affinities. But Peter wants the people to understand, I know you haven't seen him as we have seen him, as apostles. We saw him. That's one of the requirements to be an apostle, is having seen the Lord. Whether it's in a vision, a revelation, or whatever, a dream, Paul had his road on the road of Damascus in Acts chapter 9. He saw the Lord, but the light was so bright he couldn't see who it was, but he certainly knew who it was. So we don't see Christ every day in the natural. Hey, how you doing? But yet we love him. Though now you see him not. We still don't see him. Yet we believe. You see, there's something about getting in the Word and having prayer time in your life that strengthens your belief, yet believing. The older I get and the more I walk with God, I mean, he is so believable now. And he's helped me through every trial. He's helped me through every circumstance. He has helped me through every situation. I can honestly say, as Paul said, God is faithful. He's been faithful. And, you know, I've been praying about something for a few weeks, and just all of a sudden, God answered my prayer. And it's like, why does it take you so long sometimes to show up? You know, you've heard me say this. He's the most on-time, late God I've ever seen. He's always on time, but from my perspective, it's always late. It's just, where you been? What's held you up? But see, that's to test me. Will I keep believing, though I've not seen? I've not seen him. Neither have I seen an answer to my prayer. But will I keep believing? Will I keep loving? See, that's what Peter's saying to us. Having not seen, you love. You don't see him, yet you believe. Where is your faith in all of this? See, I'm always asking God, where are you in this? God is telling me, or saying to me, where's your faith? Where's your love in me, in spite of this opposition? And so, he rejoiced with joy, unspeakable and full of glory. You see, Peter knew one day the glory of God would be made manifest in us, in these clay jars, these earthen vessels, but we have to endure. And all of us endure different things in life. You know, there's things I'm sure that Joe, you and your dad have endured. I wouldn't want to have to go through it. You know, I just wouldn't want to have to go through it. And the same is applicable. There's some things I've been through that you probably wouldn't want to go through. That's why God understands everyone's test and everyone's trial, because he took on humanity so he could be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. That word infirmities, really, it's just weaknesses, just our weaknesses. And are we ever weak at times? You know, but I hope tonight that someone's been encouraged, renewed in your mind, renewed in your strength. Ephesians 4:23, Paul said, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. And sometimes all you need is just that, you know, pat on the back. Hey, pick them up. Keep going on. We're going to finish the course. Matthew 24:13, but he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. That's what we've got to do, guys.
And Pastor, I think it was out of Peter that you read that said to count it, you know, to count it as joy when you're going through tribulation. And, you know, you touched on this, but I believe that speaks to the mindset that we need to have, you know, no matter what we're going through, being optimistic and always having that hope through our faith in the Lord, that whether we come out of it physically or spiritually, we are okay because the Lord is on our side.
Absolutely.
Somebody who's pessimistic, and when things arise in life that you know, cause hindrances, people can tend to focus on those, and it brings up all these negative emotions and anger, and then, you know, people take it out on other people, and it's a nasty cycle. But to remain optimistic, I mean, what can they take away from you if you have an attitude of being even joyful or being grateful for going through tribulation and persecution?
See, that angers the devil when we don't react the way he's wanting us to react.
Mm-hmm.
See, everything he does is for a reaction. If he throws a fiery dart of lust and you don't respond, it's like, well, I need to move on to something else. He's trying to get a response out of us. You know, we've seen that in the secular world. People say things. You know, I'm not a goody white two shoes preacher. I've been in the bars and seen the verbiage that they say things to stoke you, they say things to anger you. Well, what people don't understand, that's the enemy. You know, in the Christian's life, he uses that person, that situation, that circumstance to get a reaction out of you, and he wants it to be an evil reaction. That's why he's trying to get you to fall. God allows you to suffer so that you'll be stronger next time. Satan's purpose is to make you evil. When the Bible said, call the devil the tempter in Matthew chapter 4, and when the tempter came, that word tempter in the Greek means he came to make Jesus evil. He came to make Jesus evil. When Satan comes to us, however he comes, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life, trial, temptation, adversity, it's to get a reaction out of us. And regretfully, he knows how to push my buttons. He knows how to push your buttons. He knows everybody's button. It's like a big old red, you know, blister. He knows right where to push it to get a reaction. And that's the soft spot in our armor that we've got to guard and protect, you know.
Amen.
And there's like a soft spot on a baby's head. You've got to protect it.
Pastor, thank you so very much. You've taken us to the end of the program. Yeah, it's so great to have you back with us, and we look forward to each and every Wednesday, Pastor David Langford, thevoiceofevangelism.com.
And it's interesting,
man.
About 3 months ago, we set up a program where the last Wednesday of every month with Pastor Langford, we were going to do a question and answer. I think we only got one of those because of the scheduling conflicts. So hopefully, at the end of this month,
by accident.
By the end of this month, we can do one of those shows. But Pastor,
absolutely.
Thanks, and you have a great
evening.
Thank
you so much, and everyone have a blessed week. God bless you now.
God bless. That'll do it for us tonight, folks. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much for your prayers, for your support. We are moving on. We're moving under a new mandate. I'm going to tell you something. Haven't seen anything yet, follow us on social networking, Twitter, Facebook, and of course subscribe to our, that's right,